Oliver Callan on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by It's For Women. You are not 9 to 5 and neither are we. Conveniently open online 365 days per year, 24 hours per day.
Tomorrow night, the revered and historic Palestrina Choir will fill out the National Concert Hall in Dublin for a wonderful and mellifluous Christmas concert. It's going to feature an unexpected guest who's there after being offered the chance to perform with his young nephew. He'll be reading some Dickens, of course. That is Aidan Gillen, who's with us in studio. Good morning.
Good morning.
Are you in good form? Are you?
I'm in great form, yeah. I'm just back from London. I've been working over there. Been working away a lot this year. Just flew back to perform at this concert tomorrow.
Are you finished now? Home for Christmas?
No, I'm not actually. I'm going back on Sunday to a few more days, and then I'll be finished for Christmas.
So you're back just for this weekend?
Yes, and for this.
Are you a Christmassy person?
I am, yeah, and it is it's definitely one of my favourite times of the year. I think, yeah, it is. I guess anyone who's had a reasonable, you know, childhood in Ireland will have, you know, fond memories of Christmas and the family and all the rest of it. I would put myself in that category. You know, I know it's, I'd also be mindful that it's not that way for everybody, and it is a time of year where you really got to look out for people who do get low around this time of year. So, you know, we should all be mindful of that, as I said. But I do love this time of year. I think I've always been, apart from maybe 2 years, I've always been in Dublin for Christmas.
Yeah. All the time you've been living in London, LA, and places like that.
Yeah, even living away for 25 years, I think there was maybe 1 year I was in London and 1 year I was somewhere else. So I'll always make sure to get back. And, you know, I'm one of six siblings. We all ended up, you know, particularly during the 80s and into the 90s, kind of living abroad and stuff like that. So it was one time a year where you were kind of guaranteed to see everybody.
And Drumcondra is the home place.
Drumcondra is, yeah. I grew up on Clonliffe Road there, just beside Croke Park.
Oh, right. Six, and you were the youngest?
Youngest of six kids, yeah.
Did that make you the golden child?
Not really, no. It probably meant you could get away with a little bit more. Definitely not the golden child.
You were allowed to be kind of a bit bold and mischievous.
I think we probably all were a little bit bold and mischievous.
Do they still slag you for being the baby in the family?
Unfortunately not.
So the Christmas in Dublin is back home. Do you go to Mammy's house in Drumcondra?
Yeah, that's my siblings and our kids. We'd all get together on Christmas morning in my mom's house, yeah.
Your mum works as a nurse, isn't she?
She was a nurse, yeah, for many years. Actually, when I was in London there, I was staying in this pretty out of the way neighbourhood in Brentford, and I looked at the map and I recognised, I was just trying to get to a shop looking at my phone, and I was like, Isleworth, West Middlesex Hospital. I'm pretty sure my mother did her training there. So I was on the phone going, did you stay in this nurse's home that I'm looking at like right now out of my hotel window? And she did. Yeah, my mother was a nurse.
And she worked. She worked and worked away. Worked, looked after six children.
Yeah, she worked in London. I came back and then worked in Drumcondra Hospital here. Then spent many years working in St. Monica's Nursing Home in Dublin 1.
Do you feel like you've performed service for society as well?
What?
as the son of a nurse.
Oh, yeah, performed service for society. I don't know. I think nurses and doctors and teachers work is pretty, you know, it's more important than what I do.
But there's solace for the rest of us in what you do, to be fair.
Yeah.
The Palestrina Boys Choir, how did you get involved in this?
My nephew Daniel, who's 12, is a member of the choir. Mm. It's pretty difficult to get into. Yeah. So he's been there for about 4 years, and it's great to see a kid, you know, find something that they're passionate about and then really get into it. I mean, they work really hard. The choral work they do, it's really intricate. And, you know, you've really got to be dedicated. There's many, many hours of rehearsal every week, you know, to be able to pull this off. So,
and it involves a commitment from a
real commitment.
Family, isn't it?
Yeah, it does for the kid, particularly for the boy choristers, but also their parents if they're bringing them to rehearsals or traveling abroad. You know, they are a world-class choir, and they do indeed travel the world, and particularly Europe. You know, they'll play, you know, they'll do all the main events at the Pro Cathedral, but also will do state events here and abroad, you know.
And it's been around since the 19th century. I mean,
yeah, I think it's 120 years old now.
Named after an Italian, I believe. That's the Palestrina bit, because, you know,
yeah,
there are kind of random Latin names attached to things around Dublin, aren't there?
Yeah, it was set up by a guy called Edward Martin, who was part of the Irish Literary Society. You know, he was involved in the foundation of the Abbey Theatre also.
You have your own fond memories, don't you, of theatre as a youngster around Dublin?
Yeah, well, I started acting myself quite young, like when I was 13, in a youth theatre, in Dublin Youth Theatre, which is based in Gardiner Street. So, again, like with Daniel, you know, I found that when I was 13 and was immediately, everything else just kind of fell away.
You just knew exactly what you wanted to do.
I did, yeah.
That's a kind of a gift in life, isn't it?
Yeah. I was very lucky. I mean, it was a certain amount of luck and, you know, just being in the right place at the right time and living in the, you know, where we lived. My sister found her way into this youth theatre. I followed her down. But yeah, school, everything, you know, became a kind of a secondary
Was your big
interest.
Sister? Your big sister was the inspiration, because she was the first actor.
Yeah. I mean, like, you know, we didn't have, you know, any professional, I suppose, performers in the family before that. But, you know, of this of my generation, anyway, my parents' generation, everybody was involved in, not everybody, but, you know, a lot of people were involved in fashion, amateur dramatics and stuff like that.
Yeah.
You know, my mother was doing plays when she was a kid. I had an auntie and uncle who were big on the amateur drama scene in Dublin. And, you know, they were really good at what they did.
It seems to have been a bigger scene then, doesn't it? Even with fewer people in the city.
Yeah, probably.
What do you think the reason for that is? Just life and jobs, maybe?
Yeah, there's just
gave more room.
It's just much more stuff out there. There's more distractions and more easier to do other things, yeah. But I'm sure it's still thriving. But it was always fascinating to me to see someone who was, you know, your local butcher, you know, would be, oh yeah, tonight I'm going to be King Herod, or, you know, there was this guy I knew who was a security guard in Brown Thomas Switzer's, as it was then, and he'd be down, you know, again at night playing King Lear in the Dublin Shakespeare Society studio in Arkwright George Street. You know, it's kind of fascinating.
It is, yeah. The characters of Dublin as well.
Yeah.
Like, you're a true blue dub.
I am, yeah.
What's the reluctance there?
Well, like a lot of people from Dublin, you know, my parents, my mother's from Sligo, so, you know, I'm from Dublin, but...
you have this connection to other places.
Certainly, yeah. And my father's family, Dublin, yeah, but Wexford, you know, originally. So, yeah, I do consider myself a true blue Dubliner, but... I always loved, you know, going west, you know, when we were kids, getting on the train and going to my granny's place in Sligo was pretty much as good as it got.
No wonder you were so good at playing Charlie Haughey.
Well, thank you.
so many bits of you from every part of the country. I think Dingle is very special to you as well, isn't it?
Yeah, I lived in Dingle for a number of years when I moved back to Ireland in... 15 years ago or whatever, went there for a year as a kind of a buffer zone, moving back from London and stayed for 4 years. I had been there when I was 13,
really?
To the Gaeltacht, you know, went down on my own to, you know, brush up on my Irish.
Did it work?
It did. I certainly had the best time I've ever had in a 4 week period, you know, up to that point in my life. Fell in love with that part of the world. It is a really magical place.
What is it about Dingle?
Something to do with where it's geographically placed, I suppose, just right there on the far western tip of Europe, you know, at the end of the peninsula. There's a certain je ne sais quoi, and I don't know what it is. You'd have to ask Philip King about that.
Yeah.
He talks about some ephemeral magical thing that's out there, just, you know, just
south
beyond.
Wind blowing.
Yeah.
But it works for people. You might like this message. Someone says, my parents had a drapery shop in Drumcondra years ago. I have a vivid memory of Aidan as a young fella smiling in the shop doorway as he called by to pick up messages for his mam. He had a presence back then too, says Laura. So Drumcondra is kind of the origin of the guild. But of course, you were it's a Murphy family, wasn't it?
Yeah, I wonder, is that McQuillan's drapery? I don't know.
McQuillan's.
McQuillan's, yeah.
That was the place.
That was the place.
So you kind of are a citizen of the world, or here, there, everywhere?
Yeah. I am. I mean, I've been lucky enough to get to travel, particularly, you know, with the work. I suppose I made a point of trying to establish, you know, career routes or whatever in first in England and then in America and beyond. I mean, even this year alone, I've been working in Hong Kong, Hungary, Germany, America, Poland, England, Belfast.
Are you saying this in a weary way? Or
no, not. Does it sound too weary?
No, it's just, I would say that it sounds exhausting to people who aren't used to flying for their job so much.
No, it's great.
It's still fulfilling for you?
Yeah, totally. Yeah, I still treat every job, you know, like it's my first.
Do you?
Yeah, and it's not like policy that I, you know, it's just that's what it feels like to me because, you know, I'm always, I'm always learning new things and changing it up a bit. I hope I am.
You're able to pick and choose what you get to do, I presume, at this stage in your career.
Yeah. I've always done that, actually. Held out for stuff that's, you know, just exciting or different to what I've done before, you know.
I read somewhere that you did a film once just... you weren't going to make any money out of it. I think that it barely covered your airfare to New York, and you wanted to be with acting alongside Deborah Winger.
Yeah, I mean, I do that quite often. You know, there's ones that pay the bills and ones that don't. But if the part is good, it's nice to be able to do them all, you know. And sometimes you're helping people out, or you're helping out a new director who's starting off, or it's a friend. So it's I think it's important to mix it up that way too. And who wouldn't want to go and act with Deborah Winger?
I'm sure act with you as well.
Well, yeah.
What people are doing. The ones that you do to pay the bills, do you sometimes grimace a little bit?
Not really. Okay. I don't actually. Even with those projects or whatever, I'll still be pretty discerning. Mm. Most of the time you get it right. You know, there's a few times you get it wrong, but...
All those travel that you described, that's for, I presume, a film series coming out next year. Are there things you could talk about?
All of those things I mentioned are all things, yeah, they were all films, a little bit of TV, but mostly films, and none of it has come out yet. And so that's such a long list, I'm not going to go into it because people would actually get really bored. Hopefully they're good. Hopefully the work is good.
You are a kind of well-known character around Dublin as well, yourself and Camille O'Sullivan, your partner in life. Because I've seen you around the place and the pair of you look like you've swirled out of a painting when you appear.
Do we?
Yeah, sometimes.
That's
yeah.
Nice.
Yeah. Do people approach you? What do they talk about? Because you've done so many things.
They do approach me and they will usually come up with a character name, which I quite like. I mean, when that first started to happen, I was slightly irked by it. But I worked it out that it means that if they're calling you a character name, it means they've bought it. It means they believed it. They want to have a chat about it. That's fine. It's usually the character that people mostly come up. The name I'm usually called on the street is John Boy or just John. With a bit of...
From Love,
you know,
Hate.
The character from Love, Hate. And that would be the number one.
When you're outside of Ireland, then I presume it changes.
Yeah. Kirkcaldy from The Wire is quite popular.
Yeah. You must be really proud of that one.
Yeah, I mean, I was just really fortunate. Again, right place, right time. I was doing a play in New York and got cast in this role in The Wire, which was just moving into season 3. And not, you know, people didn't really know so much about it then.
Yeah.
But it is one of the best pieces of television, you know, ever made. And it goes beyond just drama, you know. It's... Mm-hmm. Just real social commentary and a political tract.
Yes.
And to be part of that for 3 years of my life is just amazing, really.
It has another significance as well, isn't it? Because I think your dad became well while you were making that.
Unwell, yeah. I mean, while we were on the my final season of that, yeah, he was just, you know, it was moving into his last 6 months or whatever. So a lot of my time in Baltimore during those that last season, you know, it's tinged with kind of memories of how I was feeling being that far away, etc. But, you know, I did make it back.
In a close family, it must be difficult to be far away.
I think in Ireland we're all so used to it, you know, family members being scattered around the world. At times like that, yeah, of course. But, you know, I think everyone always manages to make it back if they can.
What did your father do in life?
My father was an architect. He had his own practice. He had this something like 3,000 structures or something around Dublin that was like, that really? Would have his name to them. Mostly he did, you know, jobs for, you know, like kitchen extensions, garages, you know, small, you know, it's not shopping centres or, okay, you know, yeah, apartment complexes. It's like houses, you know, extensions in Cabra and Whitehall and Crumlin, you know. And we used to work with him as kids, amazingly, at the drawing board.
What did you do?
You know, draw the plans.
Draw the plans.
we color in the certain. You know, coloring in the windows black was one of my favorite parts. Or, you know, there was certain colored pencil work that you had to do to kind of, you know. Anyway, I won't get too much into it.
Gorgeous memories, though.
Yeah, but he worked at home, so it was nice to have. You know, when you're a kid, come in from school, and your dad would be there working. You know, in the front room.
Nice memories to have.
And, you know, ad in the back of the Evening Herald, Evening Press. You know, it was real. It was very straightforward, old school practice. And he looked after people, you know.
When you become a dad yourself and you have a job that takes you all over the world, do you suddenly have memories of your dad was at home and was kind of accessible, whereas you've this job?
Yeah, well, look, that's always the thing when you're traveling, you're your guilt of leaving kids behind. But, you know, the thing is that I wasn't away all the time. And when you're back, you really are there because I've got friends. You know, I was talking to some people in the job about this just yesterday in London, you know, because everyone and three or four of us had kids. And, you know, we were just saying, yeah, you're away. But when you're there, you're there. And friends we have whose parents worked like 9-to-5 jobs or, you know, because and 9-to-5 jobs, especially nowadays, just aren't 9-to-5 jobs.
Yeah.
You know, people never saw some of their parents, you know. So when we were there, we were really there.
You're fully there.
Yeah, and also we'd bring the kids, you know, with us when we could.
It's quite a they're grown up kids now.
My kids are 26 and 24 now, and I've got a Camille's daughter who's my stepdaughter is 11, so still doing it all. Did the school run on the way here? This morning, still managed to make it on time, which is great.
Wow, well done.
Yeah.
Proper modern family.
Yeah.
How's Camille?
Camille's great. She's off to Germany to do a gig like now. She's leaving in about an hour. She's had a pretty busy year as well. She's doing that. And then she's got some gigs with Sharon Shannon in England next week, like Birmingham, London, Manchester.
You're both flat.
So pretty busy, yeah.
But you get home for Christmas together.
Yeah.
How long have you been together now?
10 years.
Did you meet on a ferry or something?
So they say. In the Sunday Independent. yeah, we did.
Now you're here to clarify, Aidan Gillen.
Yeah. We did actually meet briefly on a car ferry. Yeah, during the... it was that time when the Icelandic ash cloud changed everyone's travel situations. I was with the great Irish actor Ned Dennehy. We were we were working on something in England, and we were traveling back on the ferry. And Ned used to be an architect, you see, and he knew Camille from the architecture world because Camille used to be an architect, still is an architect, I guess. And we just had a look at each other, you know.
This is a thread through your life, the architects.
Yeah, I know.
And you coloured in the windows.
I did. Coloured them in black.
It's more of a metaphor taking place. I wonder, are you kind of reluctant to talk about the ferry thing because it sounds like a daft rom-com? You know,
It sounds made up. Yeah.
But you're together, swirling out of paintings.
And that was, but that was years before we got together, by the way.
Oh, was it?
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah. It was. I think after that, I was presenting. I was emceeing Phil Chevron, the late Phil Chevron, who was guitarist in the Pogues, when he was ill. he had like a testimonial. You know, he had a gig in the Olympia where people performed his songs, and he asked me to MC it, and I MC'd it. And one of the performers was Camille, and that was around the time we actually just started going out.
Was music already then in your life? Because you're quite passionate about it.
Yeah, music always had been. I mean, I used to listen to music like constantly, even when I was asleep. You know, I'd have my Walkman on. I'd wake up in the morning and still be going. You know, too much. I'm giving myself a little bit of a break now, but yeah, I was very, very into the music.
You have turns in music videos. Do you seek those out, or do you?
Not really. No, they seek me out.
Yeah.
You know, there's been a couple of good ones in there.
Really good ones. I mean, Fontaine's DC.
Fontaine's DC one is great. And the Ecky Muck, the Sigur Rós video.
Yeah.
Which where I got to act with a snail and a fox. That's a bit of a highlight for me.
It's the destination.
Yeah.
But as a singer yourself?
Not very good.
No, you wouldn't have made the Palestrina Choir.
Absolutely not. Okay. Which is even more why I'm doubly proud of my nephew, Daniel.
So the songs you have recorded work with Camille, you're hoping she drowns you out? Is that what you're...
Yeah, well, I think she was hoping she'd drown me out. She was actively talking through that with the producer at the time. I have just done a short film in Belfast, by the way, which I can't say much about, but where I do play a singer, and I did have to sing and record a couple of songs, which I did with John Reynolds in his studio in Enniskerry, which is fun, you know, because they were like 80s type pop, electropop numbers.
You're a good singer,
if you can imagine that.
You can sing.
Well, in this case, I just impersonated Dave Gann from Depeche Mode on one, and I think I was doing like Martha and the Muffins on the other one.
Is it a comedy? What's going on? So you're not singing at this event?
I'm definitely not singing. I'll be reading some, a passage from, Charles Dickens' Christmas Carol, which is a Christmas classic that we all know and
it's the greatest
love.
Christmas story, isn't it?
Yeah, Christmas story and a ghost story, and a cautionary tale, you know.
But we've discovered at the start you're not Scrooge when it comes to Christmas.
I'm not Scrooge. Well, Scrooge, at you know, I guess one of the the great things about A Christmas Carol is it has one of the, a really nice literary turn. I suppose the redemption of that character is what it's all about,
So Scrooge, perfect narrative arc.
I'm like latter day, later Scrooge, redeemed, the new Scrooge.
Is A Christmas Carol very special in your life? Is it something you pick up
in? Yeah, I mean, I would say that as far as reading it, when I was younger, I think I read an abridged version or whatever, but one of the first films, if not the first film that I remember going to see,
In the cinema,
the Plaza Cinema on Dorset Street, which was the closest cinema to us, was Scrooge, starring Albert Finney, which was early 70s, and Alec Guinness, who terrified me as Marley.
It's scary, yeah.
But it's pretty good. My favourite adaptation, I think, is actually The Muppet Christmas Carol, which is a really good film and unexpectedly moving. Like, there's a scene with Michael Caine in there that always brings a tear to my eye.
Which bit is that?
It's where he watches, he's in the cemetery kind of watching the love he could have had and, I'd have to rewatch it to describe the scene adequately. But, and of course, Kermit is... makes a great Bob Cratchit.
It's also very true to the book.
Yeah.
Because Charles Dickens is Gonzo Charles Dickens. Kind of
right. Yeah.
Makes us all want to watch it now. I'm going to give you some nice message before you go. Are you good on compliments?
Compliments? Yeah, I hope so.
Great to hear Aidan Gillen is on this morning. Very few actors from any country have ever had a comparable career. He's far from finished yet. A legend and a gentleman. Kind of raising the prospect that you might... that was in question. Lovely guy is Aidan Gillen. Met him and his son when he called into a charity gig, Music for Mental Health, in Dolan's in Limerick, because you're a gig goer, enthusiastic. That's from Carl. And nice to hear Aidan's own voice. More used to hearing Haughey or Littlefinger, or my first favourite role of his, Stuart in Queer as Folk. I could name many others, of course. Thanks to him for all the wonderful performances from Joe and Dublin 8.
Oh, that's really nice. Thanks, folks.
Just you've done enough for the world. You know?
Well, that's appreciated. I mean, I'm even blushing.
Is that a blush?
Yeah.
Inscrutable as ever. I better tell people when this is on there. Tickets to The Glory of Christmas with the Palestrina Choir, available from the NCH's website, which is nch.ie, or the Palestrina Choir Dublin.com if you're very good at spelling. It's tomorrow. Two shows.
There's a matinee and an evening show. Yeah.
3 p.m. and 7 p.m. Very festive, very sumptuous, and Aidan Gillen in all his glory. Thanks so much. Happy Christmas to you and to Camille and all your family.
Same to you and to all the listeners.
It's long, lad.